Hey everyone, let's talk about SEO once again. Why do we dive into this topic so much on Coaches to the Moon? One, I don't understand it well enough and I want you to understand it more. And two, I believe it's a very misunderstood topic, especially in the coaching space, where as we dive into in today's podcast, we don't seem to think it's a particularly valuable asset. But my guest today, Brandon Leibowitz from SEO Optimizer, straight out of California, sunny Los Angeles, is here to dispel some of the myths about SEO, some of the ways that I have been biased in thinking about it in the past, and to teach us some really creative and cool ways to use it to increase the trust and authority in your business. We don't just talk about SEO, backlinks, and all the technical stuff in this episode. We're talking about AI a fair amount, artificial intelligence, platforms like ChatGPT and Bard, what they can do for your business and what they cannot do for your business. And also, we dig into those paid press releases that you see people doing and how they can be beneficial or detrimental to your brand. Really great podcast. Brandon makes SEO very interesting. I think he's a great guy and I really enjoyed this show. I hope you do too. Here is Brandon Leibowitz on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're talking marketing, we're talking SEO, digital, lead generation, and everything that is encompassed within that universe. And I'm joined by Brandon Leibowitz from Santa Monica, California, who's got 14 years in the business. He runs SEO Optimizers, and we're going to talk about all things marketing today. Really, really excited to have you on, mate. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me on today.
So we were just vibing out a little bit before we clicked record on the fact that you have brought a few Instagram pages to huge followings, and this was a few years ago, so some of these strategies are not always relevant these days, but skateboarding pages is what you loved. Now, I believe Santa Monica, this is basically where skateboarding began, right?
Yeah, it started around Santa Monica, Venice, so falls right in place with what I love.
That's great, man. And are you still cruising around on a longboard? Are you surfing? What are you up to these days?
I'll cruise around, not as many tricks anymore, but still cruise around every once in a while down by the beach. But falling yeah, hurts on cement, so snowboarding is a little bit easier. We're surfing, but still love skateboarding.
It hurts a lot more these days, eh?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Man, the stuff we used to do when we were like 14 years old, be like, oh yeah, eight steps, I'll jump down that. You know, I'll jump off this little roof and then I'll just get up. And then when I moved to the beaches where I am now, so this was about five years ago when I was about 27, I saw a skate park that was better than any skate park I'd ever been to. And I got my old board and I went down there and I tried just a little 50-50 on a ledge and I just went down no harder than I used to. And I just limped home with my head in my hands and I just wasn't used to it, man. It's a nightmare. On to bigger and better things, I suppose.
Yep, it's not as fun falling on that concrete anymore. It hurts a lot, but it's fun. But when you fall, that's where you're just like, all right, is it worth it? The risk versus reward.
Yeah. So you've been in the marketing space for about 15 years now. So I'll assume you're at least 21. How old are you, Mark? Brandon, sorry, I was looking at the word Mark on your list here. I'm so sorry. Very embarrassing. How old are you, Brandon?
All good. I am 39.
39. Cool. I'm turning 33 in a few months' time. And I think you know, there's still a lot of world ahead of us, which is really exciting, man. So how did you get into the space of marketing? What happened for you? Was there a career before that, or what was the spark that led you down the track you're on today?
No, I was going to school for business marketing, got my degree, and after I graduated, the first job I got out of school was helping a company out with their digital marketing, which I didn't really know much about digital marketing or SEO, and they like, don't worry, we don't know much either. You know, like take you to workshops, seminars, classes, and learn with you, which I thought was kind of interesting. I was like, let me give it a shot. see what this whole digital thing is all about. And after going to like a few workshops, just realized it's probably the future. Everyone's probably gonna have a website. And also I realized they kept talking like, you could do affiliate marketing, you have your own business. Like they kept talking about that stuff. So it got me interested because I always had that entrepreneurial spirit where I knew I wanted my own company one day and wanted to do something, just didn't know what I wanted to do and trying to figure that out. Thought maybe skateboarding or something like that, which kind of doing that now. We can talk about that later. But the SEO, I realized that you could work full-time at a company doing their marketing, and then I could go to like a doctor or a lawyer or a restaurant, as long as there's no conflict of interest, and potentially get some new clients. So I work full-time working at this new job before work, after work, on my lunch breaks. I pick up a few clients here or there and did that over the years, working at different advertising agencies as like a director of SEO, and just always working before work and after work, and built that up to where I was able to eventually quit my job and been doing my own thing ever since, just helping people tap into that free traffic from Google, doing SEO, and do a little bit of paid ads, a little bit of social, but really more geared towards the search engine optimization.
What's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. It really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode.
Yeah, congrats, man. So how long were you working for other people at a job while you built your business before you actually went all out by yourself?
Probably about 8-9 years-ish, because I was happy to just get a job out of school and just pick up a few extra clients here or there. I didn't really go all in until a few years ago, like 5-6 years ago. I was like kind of almost making the same amount by making these agencies. Maybe I should just go all in and really see what I could do, scale it and grow it, and just realize I should probably just focus my attention on this. And also like the freedom, the flexibility of having your own business, even though you work a lot more, but at least I could set my own hours and set my schedule, which makes it a lot more flexible and easier.
100%, man. 100%. It's tough to give up a paycheck, right? A regular paycheck. But I'd love to know from your perspective, what was your approach like and your sort of your mentality in business like when you had a full-time job versus those first couple years working for yourself?
I mean, luckily I was working full-time doing SEO and doing SEO on the side. So it all fell into place where I'm learning on the job, learning after work and before work. So it just really helped me really know the ins and outs of SEO, but didn't really know the ins and outs of running a business, which is very, very different than just doing marketing. Yeah. So that's where I had to, well, I've gotten mentors, and that's really helped out a lot, but it's a lot of just trial and error, trying things out, trying to learn from other people, talking to other people, get ideas of like what needs to be done to like systemize things and get things so I could scale instead of working so much in the business, but work on growing it and getting it to that next level, which still working on that. I feel like that never ends, but just trying to really manage, hire people, deal with a lot more than just doing SEO. Now it's really, was a one-man show. Now I have a team, which helps out, but still there's a lot that falls on my plate, and just trying to learn how to delegate more and get more time back so I can focus on more important, bigger things.
100%. I'll make a note to definitely talk about delegation in 2 minutes, because I just love that topic so much. But in terms of, I love the fact like that you went for almost a decade working hard for someone else whilst being growing your own business on the side, because that's the antithesis of every sort of internet hustle porn influencer these days, who's like, you got to burn the boats, man, get your back against the wall, eat freaking ramen, like, and just work 18 hours a day on your business. And for me, I did the same as you. I always, for the first sort of 7-8 years of my business, I spent very little of that time without a job. And I didn't have a full-time 9-to-5. I was working in restaurants, so I would find myself either a gig where I could work in the evenings and work and at a restaurant and work during the day, or I would do the opposite where I kind of make coffee in the mornings from sort of like 5 a.m. till 2 p.m. and then I had the afternoons and evenings to work on business. And the way I made decisions in my business when I had income versus no income was so different, because you don't need every sale, and you can make, you know, you can make decisions out of logic, not desperation. And so I really appreciate the way you did that, man, because I don't think enough people talk about having a, you know, I suppose, letting go of your ego enough to work a job whilst growing a business, because it's not nearly as sexy as the just go all in day one story, right? So congrats, man. Are you glad you did that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think I could ever go back to 9 to 5 now, looking back, and should have done it a long time ago, because my friend, well, I told him, you should just quit your job and just go freelance, and he did it like 5 or 6 years before me, and he kept telling me to do it, but never pulled that trigger and just kept kind of double dipping, working full time and doing my own side thing. But eventually I was like, all right, I should really just go all in with this.
Can't say I blame you, man. Do you have kids? Do you have a partner?
No kids yet, but
yeah, there you go. Well, that's a massive one for me. I went completely all in on my job, my business, sorry, when my just before my twins were born, about 3 years ago. And so moving before that, yeah, I could work all day long. And now the freedom comes from necessity to drop my business any second of the day because I get a call from daycare that one of them's been sick, that sort of thing. So stuff that you can't really do at a job quite as easily. So, but that stuff all comes from having a team, having systems and delegation. So what does your team look like now these days?
No, right now I have a few, well, I think maybe like 3 full-time people. And then with SEO, it's a lot of content. So a lot of writing articles, blogs, press releases, just a ton of content. So I have about like maybe 10 writers that kind of just pull out freelance, be like, all right, need this content creation or this created. But yeah, it's a lot of content marketing with SEO and just trying to get good quality content out there and then delegating to the team, just helping them distribute that content in the right places to the right people. That way Google starts trusting you more, because the way you rank higher on Google is by getting what are called backlinks, getting other websites to link out to you. The more websites that link out to you, the more trust Google gives to you and the higher they rank you. So that's really what I'm focused on, is just making systems to help find good targeted relevant websites that are related to the business, and then getting good content that those websites are looking for created and getting them to publish it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So let's talk SEO. Let's talk backlinks. Let's talk all that stuff, because it's in the coaching space, right? I think it's a funny industry where no one's really looking for a coach. I think 90% of people aren't thinking, I need a spirituality mentor, or I need a transformational life coach. It's kind of just, you need to market to people who don't have that awareness just yet. Whereas service-based businesses, like you talked about before, restaurants, doctors, accountants, people search restaurant Santa Monica, family doctor, North Narrabeen, which is where I live. And so in my slightly biased opinion towards social media in my industry, I believe that SEO is probably more relevant for some businesses than for others, but I'd love to hear your opinion on that one.
Yeah, I mean, if people aren't searching for your keywords, then there's not much you can really do unless you figure out other variations of, like, if someone's looking for a spirituality coach, maybe they're going to be searching for an article about, like, what is the meaning of life or something like that. You write a good blog post on your website, get that to rank for that keyword, pull them in, and then hopefully you lead them into wanting to learn more about who you are, your product or your service or whatever you're offering. But it's tough if no one's really searching for it. That's where, like you said, social comes more into play, because it's a little bit different. People aren't really searching per se on social, even though people do, but most people are just browsing around. They get that explore or suggested feed, and that's where they find new stuff that's related to content that they've been looking at the past, or their friends or other people that they follow are looking at. So tries to suggest that to you in a recommendation style, which works really well if people aren't searching, but it's just trying to kind of think outside the box and really look at your competition and see what they're doing. Like with SEO, I could look at your backlinks again. Backlink is really a clickable link from another website that points to yours. So like, say you're reading an article in the New York Times, it says Brandon Leibowitz. You click on it, it goes to my website. I'd be getting a backlink from the newyorktimes.com. So I could look at any of your competitors, like if there's any coaches out there, and see where they're getting backlinks from and reach out to those sites and see if maybe they're getting traffic from those sites. Maybe they got published on some big website about spirituality, or about where they got an interview done on them, or they were on the podcast. We could kind of reverse engineer their entire strategy and then try to incorporate that into your own business. You have to pay for these tools, but they work really well. The more popular ones I would say are like Ahrefs, A-H-R-E-F-S, or Moz is a really popular one to look at websites backlinks and kind of see what they're doing, what type of marketing they're doing. You could see, are they really heavily in social media? Are they doing a lot of blogging, press releases, like whatever they're doing, you can really see that whole strategy. You go into trade shows, you can see all that stuff.
Yeah, wow, yeah. Backlinks is something I've started to understand better through having two or three SEO guys on the podcast. And I'll admit, I have been getting myself on more podcasts for that reason. It's not so much because I think people will actually listen to the whole podcast, because I don't have, you know, that much expectation of anyone to really care about what I have to say for 45 minutes or so. But the backlinks is great. And just, I'm starting to see gradually the little trickles of people saying they found me on Google, that sort of thing. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the paid press release, because this is something that we're seeing an awful lot of nowadays. And I'm guilty of both, I think, quality and low quality versions of this. When you see as featured in Forbes, as seen on CNN, Fox News, that sort of thing. And there's definitely a very, very big spectrum of how good those articles are. So in your ideas, Brandon, as an expert on SEO, is that detrimental or beneficial to a small business or a brand to be paying for press releases?
Well, most of the time you need to, I mean, there's a lot of distribution companies out there, so it's not bad to distribute your press release, but it just depends where you're distributing it. So if you're distributing on some low quality sites, that's not going to really be beneficial. So if you're going for like a press release distribution where it's like $200, $300, it's probably going to get you on some low quality sites, unfortunately, where a lot of these sites are going to be like, well, in the United States, there's like ABC and CNN and Fox and all these news sites. They'll make websites that kind of look like these news sites, but they're really not, or they're just like in some deep, deep page on a subdomain that no one's ever going to find. So those aren't really beneficial, but there are some good ones. Like PR Newswire is one that's really good for distribution. It costs thousands of dollars to distribute it through PR Newswire, but that's where you get on like the bigger sites that are more authoritative and more credible and trustworthy. And in the past, when I first started doing SEO, it was a numbers game. The more websites you're on, the more popular Google thinks you are. It's like the more backlinks you have, but now it's not the number of backlinks. In the past, it was quality or quantity. The more you had, the better. Now it's quality. So you have to find quality sites. And quality means you might only get on a few sites, but if you get on a few really good quality sites that are really relevant and authoritative, that's going to help out much more than getting on 1,000 low quality sites that just don't have much value to them. So like you said, like Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Huffington Post, New York Times, LA Times, all the sites are really beneficial if you get on them. Unfortunately, a lot of them are like pay to play, where if you pay a writer, they'll write an article about you in Forbes for like $2,000 and New York Times, all the sites. But Google doesn't really know. They don't want you to buy backlinks, and I wouldn't recommend it. But those ones, I mean, they don't really know. They're not like Forbes isn't saying we sold this person this $2,000 backlink, because Forbes doesn't even know it's some writer that's just kind of sliding through the cracks and is able to do that without getting caught. But a lot of those pages are also no follow or no index. So they don't, so Google's not blocked from these pages, or they add a tag to not count these backlinks for SEO. So it devalues it. And then there's always that question, all right, if Google doesn't count that backlink, but they still see that you're mentioned on Forbes, that still has some value as like a citation. So they're mentioning you, but it's not the same as that clickable link, which the clickable link really holds that value, but where you have to be able to click on your name and it takes you to your website, or click on something and it takes you to your website. That's where you really get the value. So it's a tricky one, but I really just think the quality over quantity, and find sites that are relevant to you. That's really number one, is like, if you're joining but doing like podcasts and things like that, if you're just getting on random podcasts, that doesn't do much good. Like if you get on other marketing, branding, business, anything related to business, really, it doesn't have to be exactly what you're doing. Just the more related, the better. But as long as it's somewhat related, that's really what Google's looking at. So relevancy is what I would focus more on.
Yeah, well, I don't want other marketers really watching what, you know, listening to my podcast, because I want their clients or their potential clients listening to me. So I don't market to marketers. But yeah, I completely get it. and quantity over quality, or vice versa, sorry, is something I have to explain to people a fair bit in terms of those vanity metrics on socials as well. And we were talking earlier about how you amass these big followings on Instagram. And, you know, I did some experiments a couple of years back as well with Facebook engagement and likes campaigns and seeing how fast we could grow a page to 10,000 followers. But you just learn that, you know, having 1,000 local followers or 1,000 people who are, you know, somewhat in your demographic rather than 100,000 followers where, you know, 90,000 might be from South Korea, it's not really going to be that helpful for you. Whereas it is actually a lot cheaper, easier and faster to get followers from, you know, internationally, from huge countries like in India and Asia, that sort of thing. So yeah, I think vanity metrics is a funny thing. I'd love to ask you, when you start with new clients who come in, some of the maybe greener clients to the SEO game, what are some things that people think they need that they don't actually need?
Yeah, I mean, people, they don't really know what they need. That's where I feel like most people just don't know what they need at all. And they're just kind of new to this whole SEO thing, or they think they need, well, the biggest thing is backlinks. Most of them don't know what backlinks are and don't realize how important backlinks are. Most people just think we need to just optimize your website. So that's what most people think, is just throw some keywords on my website and I'm going to rank, which unfortunately is not going to really work. You could build the best website, you can make it load quickly, you can make it all the things that Google wants, but if you don't have backlinks, Google's not going to trust you. So backlinks really build trust, because Google just, they don't want to rank any website. They want to rank you, then find out that all of a sudden you become, you're at first a coach, like a life coach, and then all of a sudden, a few months later, you become some like gambling pharmaceutical site, which happens all the time. It's called like a bait and switch. Well, they'll make a normal website, they'll rank it for a bunch of keywords, and then all of a sudden they'll switch over to something really weird and shady, and Google doesn't want that to happen. And also like the dark web, you have to think like probably over half the websites are kicked off Google because it's just weird stuff that Google just doesn't trust them. So the ones that do show up in the search results, Google really wants to scrutinize you and make sure you are trustworthy and credible. So that's where the backlinks build that trust and let Google know that you are kind of, it's like a popularity contest. It's like those websites are like voting for you, essentially saying we vote and give you some trust over to let Google know that we think you're a legitimate business and you're credible. But a lot of people don't realize that and just focus on fixing their website, make it look nice and pretty, putting keywords in the coding, which is important, but without those backlinks, it's not going to work.
Interesting. Yeah, I went to a graphic designer yesterday, and the first thing I was like, I need a logo, because my logo, I built it myself 4 years ago, and it's going to, my business is going to catch up with it soon, and then I'll be that guy who made his own logo 10 years ago. And she was like telling me all these things I need before that. And it was really interesting to go in as someone who I believe I know about marketing, and then as an expert in that one specific field, she was showing me all the things I need before even thinking about a logo. And it was really good. So Brandon, and by the way, I realized why I called you Mark. There's a comedian called Mark Norman. I don't know if you know who that guy is, but you look just like him. Handsome, funny guy. So congrats on that one. So I do apologize.
No worries.
I'm really interested by the fact that, you know, you were talking about Google the entire time just then, and obviously SEO is search engine optimization, and a lot of people are moving away from Google in terms of privacy concerns. I know people are using search engines like DuckDuckGo or incognito mode and VPNs and all this stuff to, you know, hide their movements on the internet. Is that having an effect on the SEO world, and how are you moving through that?
Yeah, I mean, when I look at analytics, and this is me looking at thousands of websites over the years, like Google brings probably like 20 to 80% of your traffic. Bing brings about 1%. Yahoo brings about 1%. DuckDuckGo might bring 0.5%. Brave might be bringing 0.5%. All these ones don't really bring much. Then the rest of your traffic comes from social media, email marketing, paid ads, people just typing your website in directly. But I've never really seen another search engine bringing more traffic than Google. But I would recommend to everyone install Google Analytics or some tracking and look at your data and see where your traffic is coming from, because every website is different and you never know. But for the most part, Google just runs the show and they're not going anywhere anytime soon. For the most part, we'll have to see how AI affects that. But right now, Google just really has such a strong market hold on everyone that you just optimize for Google, you're going to be good for the most of the other search engines, because they're all similar algorithms. They're all different with machine learning. They don't really know how they work, and everyone is separated from one another. So if you work in Google on the search engine with all these different teams that they don't even communicate with one another, and they work on different aspects of the search engine, so no one really knows how it works, and it changes every single day. But there's some kind of like similarities, like content, backlinks, like title tags, all these like little cues that let them know what to rank you for. But Google, or I mean Bing, actually owns Yahoo. So if you search on Yahoo, it's not really Yahoo. It's Bing that's owned them or powered the search results for probably like 8 or 9 years now. So if you optimize for Google and you optimize for Bing, that kind of covers the big three. But again, Bing and Yahoo only bring about 1% of the traffic. It's so tiny that it doesn't have that big of an impact. Unless you're a big corporate website where you get like thousands of people every single day, then that 1% does add up. Where I've worked with big corporate sites that were like, all right, let's try to tap into some of this market share, because Bing is bringing in a few thousand people every single day. It's not comparing to Google, which is bringing tens of thousands, but it's still bringing in some revenue and people do use it. It's just not as popular.
Interesting. Interesting. So it's not the end for Google just yet. It's probably only getting bigger and stronger. And it's probably also my own personal algorithms and people I know, especially in the coaching space where everyone's very skeptical of establishment, that people are starting to, you know, hide more of their data and try and move themselves off of the system, so to speak. So in terms of AI, you've mentioned it a couple of times now. We'll probably go into this a little bit. I'm going to throw a concept at you that one of my clients said the other day to me, and I thought it was really interesting. So artificial intelligence, mostly ChatGPT, draws its info from a certain percentage of the internet and then uses that to create more content. My client, Jack, who's a genius, he's a landscaper, basically. He works with removing stumps and coring people's lawns, but he knows business and he's the smartest guy I know. He goes, at some point, the ratio is going to switch from the internet being mostly human-generated content to being mostly AI-generated content, and then AI is drawing from more AI to create content. And I don't really know how fast that will happen, but I thought it was a really interesting concept. Now, in terms of what you do, you're massive on content creation, blogs, articles, this sort of thing. Talk to me, Brandon, about how artificial intelligence is having an effect on your business, how and if you guys are using it, and where you see it going and how rapidly these changes are going to happen.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are using it to create content, but it's not the best for creating content because of what you just said. Well, AI, if you tell them to write me a blog post about whatever topic, about mechanics, like how to fix my car, like flat tire, or write that article for you or blog post, but if it doesn't know what to put in there, it's going to do what's called AI hallucinations, and it just makes something up. It's not going to tell you it's making it up because it wants to give you an answer. And then if you copy that and paste it on your website, and it's not incorrect, or if it's not really helpful, it's not really beneficial, it's incorrect information, it's a bad user experience, and it's not going to help the reader out. It's actually going to do more harm than good. And Google said a few months ago that they don't care who writes the content. In the past, they're like, if it's written by AI, we don't want it. Now, they're like, as long as it offers value, we don't care. So double, triple check everything. If you're just going to copy and paste from ChatGPT or Bard or any of these tools, it's probably not going to be the best. It's probably going to do more harm than good in the long run. So I would really double, triple check everything, take everything with a grain of salt that you see from this AI stuff. And also, if someone just posts something that they get from AI and it's incorrect, I might post it on my blog. And then, like you said, AI is going to read that, learn from that. And it's going to get this downward spiral where it's learning from its hallucinations and making things up, which I feel like it should let you know if it's making something up and not just make it up. just to make it up, just to make you feel good that you're getting some sort of answer. But it does work for a lot of other stuff. It's pretty helpful. Like, you could use it to, it's more like a tool. I would say it just depends on how you use that tool. If you're just thinking it's going to do everything for you and just automate everything, it's maybe in like 5 or 10 years, it might do that. But right now, stuff to really help it and take everything with a grain of salt. But you could like ask it, here's a blog post that one of my competitors wrote. Can you tell me all the keywords that this is that mentioned that are mentioned in here? So you can see what keywords your competitors are targeting. You can say, can you tell me how many people search for these keywords? So it'll give you like search volume. But again, I would double, triple check everything. Maybe use like the Google Keyword Planner. It's a free tool from Google that will show you actually how many people actually search for that keyword every single month, which if you're doing the stuff that I'm talking about, I'd probably use Bard because Bard is from Google. And if you're trying to rank on Google, I'd look at Bard versus ChatGPT is from Bing, which Bing is good. But for trying to rank on Google, and Google just has such a big market share, let's use the one from Google. You can tell it to like write you title tags. So there's like these SEO title tags that you have to write for each page on your website. You can tell it to write you them, and Bard will give you like 5 different choices. But then it'll give you tips saying like title tag needs to be 60 characters. It needs to have like your company name in here with these keywords. And it gives you a bunch of variations. If you ask ChatGPT, it just gives you like one answer and doesn't give you many, like much info besides it. So if you are doing AI for SEO purposes, Chat or Bard is going to give you a lot more detailed information and really help out. But if you are using it for content creation, I would say use it to create an outline. Yeah. Don't have it create the content, but have it create an outline for you where you could work off that, build off it, or give you blog post topic ideas, because every once in a while you're just like, all right, I've written about this topic so many times. What can I write about spirituality, coaching? Like, how can I make this unique? And these AI tools will really make unique, captivating blog post topics, and it really helps out. But again, you gotta just double, triple check everything, make sure it's accurate, make sure it makes sense. Don't just copy and paste it. Otherwise, you're probably gonna put out incorrect information, which you don't wanna do.
I completely agree. Really, really good as a tool, not as a finished product. And because we coach people as well, so we do done for you marketing for businesses, but I also run a couple of courses where I teach coaches to kind of start their ads journey, and copywriting is obviously a big part of that. And for the people who just can't get started, they procrastinate, I say, okay, take these in the session today, take these ideas, plug it into ChatGPT and say, write a 250-word Facebook ad in a conversational tone using this information. And then it comes back. And then I know when people send me something that is completely copied and pasted from there, because it uses the same phrases all the time. Unlock your potential. But wait, there's more, you know, and it's really, really cheesy. I liken it to having one of those scientific calculators that we used to have at school, you know, with millions of buttons. And if you give that to me, I know how to, you know, add up the bill at a restaurant. But if you give it to a physicist, they know how to calculate the age of the universe with it. And so I figure that ChatGPT AI is really just a tool for, how good you are at doing it will give you the quality of content that you need. So Bard, hey, because we all heard dodgy things about Bard when it first came out. I think it wasn't great in the first few weeks. Is that correct? There was like a controversy around it.
Yeah, I mean, they're all not that good right now. Just in general, okay. They're all still struggling. But for SEO purposes, I would say if you are going to do it for like keyword research or like content, stuff like that, competitor analysis, where you're like, hey, here's my website, give me a list of competitors and what keywords they rank for, I would use ChatGPT or Bard over ChatGPT. You could try both. But sometimes when you use ChatGPT, it doesn't really know or crawl all the websites. So it doesn't have that access that Google does. I feel like they will release more in the future. But right now, like ChatGPT doesn't know beyond, I think, like 2021 or something like that. So, but Google's Bard is able to tell you stuff that happened yesterday. And so it's a lot more up to date. But the accuracy still not there for both of them. So got to double, triple check everything, like you said, with people just writing ad copy or writing social media content copy, stuff like that. It's good, but it's not there yet. And it's kind of easy to see through that, kind of like the patterns of what words they commonly use and phrases.
Yeah, I see it all the time. It's very, very funny. So in terms of the AI, like this is something that I I love to talk to you about because you clearly understand it really well. AI, what you said before about, you said something about when, if you're a spirituality coach, no one's going to be searching for you on, you'll have very low keyword hits for spirituality coach, but you might have higher keyword hits for the meaning of life, that sort of thing. And that can then funnel people into your business and into your awareness. I see that as kind of the real top of the funnel stuff, bringing people down to spirituality coaching in, you know, when they're kind of more aware of it. So would you, how do you come up with those topics? Like, is that just years of experience coming from you saying, okay, if you want people to be finding a spirituality coach, then why don't you write a blog about the meaning of life? Is that coming from experience, or are you using, you know, can we use tools like AI to say, what would be some top of the funnel keywords to draw people towards my relatively low demand business?
Man, you could probably ask it. I'm not sure. I haven't tried that prompt yet, but I'm sure it'll give you something back. I'm not sure what it will say, but you could say, like, give me topically related keywords to spirituality coaching. So I'll give you, like, keywords that are related to that topic that might have, you not have other thought of, like, religion, or, I mean, I'm sure you thought of that, but I mean, I'll give you some random ones that you might not have thought of that will help you draw on it and give you ideas and suggestions. But the Google Keyword Planner is something that works really well. Go in there, type in spirituality coach, and it'll give you a list of keywords related to that. So you can kind of pull on, and it'll show you how many people actually search for that keyword. So you can say, all right, spirituality coaching gets 500 people searching for it a month. Spirituality coach without the coaching might get 5,000 people searching for it every single month. So your keyword might not be the best, but a variation, a synonym, a plural, some under, like, industry slang term that you might not have thought of will be up there, because Google Keyword Planner, you put one keyword in there, it's going to give you hundreds of variations for you to choose from.
Wow. And that, those sorts of tools, they are actually, you know, that's a tool that you can use and just trust in your mind.
Yeah. And it's free. It's from Google. I mean, sometimes the numbers don't always make sense. Like, sometimes it might say zero search volume. I'm like, I search for that keyword all the time. Like, someone's searching for it. If I'm searching for it, there's definitely other people. So yeah, I kind of take everything with a grain of salt that I see, but if it does, I mean, it's better than nothing. Unfortunately, that's really the best source we're going to get is the Google Keyword Planner. It's from Google. It's pulling that data in versus some other third-party tool that's trying to guesstimate. But yeah, you never really know what to trust, unfortunately. So they're all going to give you different numbers, and sometimes the numbers make sense. Sometimes it's just like, really? Zero people search for this keyword, but I'm searching for it right now. I searched for it in the past. Like, why is this not triggering? But it's just how they, what data they want to give you. They want to give you everything. They just want to give you what they want to give you.
Got it. Got it. That's fascinating. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing as well, right? Who's in control of what you see? And, you know, people say that there's political biases on AI tools, that sort of thing, and there's nothing we can really do about it. I love it. It's so interesting. Mate, is there, can you give us an idea of the spectrum, like, of the size of businesses that you work with?
Well, usually work with anywhere from, usually try to go for a little bit more established companies. Startups are a little bit tougher to work with. Sometimes it's, they're really in, like, we got to go and build as quickly as possible. SEO is like going a long term. It's going to not be that immediate skyrocketing growth. Whereas if you're doing, like, social or paid ads, you'll get that. But with SEO, it's more just, all right, we're going to build this up and we're going to build it up over time. And it's going to take months to get you up there. But in the long run, it's going to pay off. So going for, like, more established businesses, small, medium-sized businesses, done corporations in the past, worked with big corporations when I worked at advertising agencies and on my own freelance, but most of them are, I'd say, more like businesses that maybe have, like, 5 to 30, 40 employees, around that range.
Okay. Because I'm always curious with sort of more local businesses, if there's a cap for how much you can really spend on digital marketing, because I feel like, if, you know, for our local business clients, it's very, very different to the ones who maybe advertise nationally or internationally, because at a certain point, you're going to start saturating the audience a little bit. So say you've got a, you know, you mentioned restaurants before, say you have a restaurant, locally, and you're working on their SEO. So when people search, you know, tacos Santa Monica, they get to the top of that list. Is there a point where they just don't need to spend any more on that, or is it a consistent game of maintenance when you get up to the top of the ranking?
It just depends on the competition. If you don't have any competition, once you get up there, then you'll stay up there. But there's only 10 spots on that first page of Google.
Yeah.
Only 3 spots on those maps if you're a local business. So once you get to the top, you're pushing someone off. And if you have a lot of competitors, if you have like a really heavily competitive industry, they're going to fight for that top spot. They're not going to let you just take it. So that's where it just comes down to how competitive are those keywords. The more competitive they are, the more maintenance that we have to do to make sure that you don't just drop down and completely disappear. Like if you're a restaurant in Los Angeles, where I live, a lot of restaurants, not many spots on that first page of Google. They're constantly fighting for it versus some really small, obscure town that might only have like 5 restaurants. You get to that first page of Google, pretty much good. You're on that first page. You only got 5 competitors. There's 10 spots there. So you don't really have to maintain it too much. So that's really where it comes down to play and like how competitive are these keywords.
Got it. So if you're taco restaurant in Los Angeles, that's an offense, you know, you're on the offense. And then when you get up there, you're defending that spot all the time. But if you're tacos in Northern Albury Wodonga in the middle of Victoria, rural Victoria in Australia, then you're probably safe. So it must be so many factors depending on size of the industry, size of the competition. And what about, you know, in the way that you would say niching down, like, is that, we always said that's a really effective way of getting more sort of expertise, so more of an expert role in your space when it comes to social media ads. You know, if you're business coaching, you're competing with Gary Vaynerchuk and Tony Robbins. But then if you're business coaching for, you know, landscape gardeners, then that's, you know, a much, much smaller pool and you're not competing against as many people. Surely that must be a factor in SEO as well, because if someone comes to you and they are competing in a marketplace where maybe they're making running shoes, they're never going to beat Nike. So do you ever offer any advice in that area of things about how you can just, I suppose I don't really have much of a question there because I don't know enough about it, but is niching down your content going to be beneficial in terms of SEO as well?
Yeah, I mean, I tell some people, well, if you're selling like clothing, I'm like, all right, this can be really, really competitive. Unless there's something really unique about this, how do we differentiate you from all these big, big corporations? It's going to be really, really tough. Unless you have a big, big budget, we're not going to really be able to penetrate that market. We'll have to find something more unique, something like eco-friendly clothing or children's clothing or something that just differentiates yourself. Because if you're just selling the same thing that everyone else is, it's feasible, but it's just like, all right, how realistic is this going to be? Because it's probably going to take a couple of years to rank for those keywords because they're just so competitive. And those big corporations probably have a whole team of people that are pushing this SEO. And they're probably spending tens of thousands of dollars every single month just to keep those rankings up there. And if you're not able to compete with that, then we got to be like, all right, what's something that's going to be a little bit more realistic that's still going to hit those goals, but in a different way? We'll start smaller and then build it up and build up and eventually want to try to hit those bigger keywords, but that's just going to take a lot longer. And just try to tell them in the meantime, we need to figure out something that's going to rank faster, because you don't want to just wait 2 years to get some rankings, which if it's really competitive, it could take years to get those rankings, because especially if you're a brand new website, you don't have any trust built up. And these websites could have been around for 20 plus years, building trust up all this time that Google's like, we know these websites. They're not going to flip the switch and become some weird, shady, kind of sketchy website. But we don't know who you are, and we don't trust you because we don't know if you're going to do that or not. And that takes time to let Google know that, hey, I'm not going to do anything like that. I'm real. I'm legitimate. I'm not stealing people's credit cards or whatever people are doing to hack websites.
Right. It's kind of like running Facebook ads off of a brand new profile, brand new account. There's limits to how much you can spend, and if you launch too much at once, then your page gets restricted instantly until you prove your identification in multiple ways. That's I'm learning a lot from you, mate. And so what, one thing I think I'd love you to help us to finish up with, because we've done 45 minutes already, it goes like that, and I know that you've got to go and have some tacos. So I'm a small business, you know. Let's say I'm a local or expanding small business, and you've just talked to me about how if I want rapid growth, social media is the place to go, but if I want that long-term trust, then Google is the place to go. How would you pitch me and sell me on working with SEO optimizers and taking on what you guys do to help my business?
It depends what type of business you are, but if you're like a local business and I help you get ranked higher on Google,
okay,
but not on Google, but making sure that you show up on Google Maps, trying to take up as much free real estate as possible on that first page of Google. Also, images appear on Google sometimes, not all the time. So optimizing all your images, it's kind of like standard best practice, but videos, they also sometimes appear. So if you have any videos, you want to optimize those. And videos are primarily YouTube because Google owns YouTube. They're not really going to show Vimeo or Dailymotion or Facebook video because they want you to. I mean, Google only makes, they don't even care about making money. If you search on Google, you don't click on an ad, Google's not making money. If you search on Google and you watch a YouTube video, the first thing that appears anytime you watch a YouTube video, it's always an advertisement. So YouTube is making money, just Google making money. So just trying to make sure that you maximize that real estate, that Google's going to let you get some free real estate, and just trying to figure out what keywords people actually search for, incorporating those into your website. So finding buyer intent keywords that are actually drive conversions and working on those type of keywords and then building those backlinks. But it's not really a one size fits all with SEO. Sure. You've got to really look at your website versus competitors and figure out what are your competitors doing? How much SEO have they done? And how much SEO do we need to do to your website to get you to that level that you want to be at?
That's the really interesting part of it, looking at what your competitors are doing and then seeing how can we, you know, compete with the level of activity they've got. That's something definitely, you know, you see your followers, what they're posting, but then going in the sort of back end and finding how much and how they're doing it. That's a really, really cool way of doing it, man. And I believe that this is a service that I probably need to be looking into. Probably need to be doing more of it. And as the team expands, reaching out to someone like Brandon and SEO optimizers to help us get those clicks, man. It's what it's all about. When did it all get so complicated, hey? When did it all become about backlinks and analytics? Why can't we just walk on the beach all day? Maybe one day we can.
That is a goal. Just relax, hang out by the beach.
Yeah, put in a few years and then hang out by the beach, man. Dude, really, really lovely conversation today. I think you get me interested in a topic which, when you break it down for most people, isn't that interesting on paper, but what it can do, what it can achieve, and the way that you think about it, I think it's really amazing. And I can see out of this interview, over a lot of SEO interviews I've done in the past, how much creativity is involved in it, how much potential there is. And I just like the way you think, man. So to end on a few compliments, I think you're a really, really clever dude, and I really appreciate the insights you've given us today.
No, thank you so much. Glad to share my knowledge and help others out, learn how to just tap into that free traffic and start just seeing that those leads and sales coming in without spending money on ads.
Yeah, don't pay me, pay Brandon. Thanks a lot, mate.
We'll both help out. We'll both help each other out.
That's right.
We work together.
All right, I'll throw you a bone and you throw it back in my face. That's all good, man. I really appreciate it. Well, I'm sorry I called you Mark again, but Mark Normand is an up-and-coming comedian and a very funny guy, and you look a lot like him. So, this has been Brandon Leibowitz with SEO Optimizers on Coaches to the Moon. Thank you once again, my friend. I'll be back next week with two more episodes of this wonderful show that is made wonderful by you guys listening to it. So thank you so much. I'll see you next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Much love and peace out. Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end.
If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials, you can follow them, you can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.